We're back on the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm John Ledyard, your host from over at FanRagSports.com. And the Steelers have done it again. They escaped Cincinnati with a 23-20 victory. It looked unlikely most of the way. Get on board. That's exactly what the whole season's looked like so far for the Steelers. And Cincinnati continues to blow it against Pittsburgh. 9 out of their last 10 they've lost. I think that's now 14 out of the last 16 they've lost as well. What a train wreck of a franchise they turn out to be. Marvin Lewis cannot get out of there fast enough. I cannot believe Cincinnati let Pittsburgh back into this one. I mean, they had 17-0. Pittsburgh had nothing going right. The devastating injury to Shazier, I'm sure, had some effect on the players' mental state, although I thought that their performance was kind of indicative of the way they came out and the way they've come out this season, regardless of the injury. And Cincinnati did what they somehow always do. I mean, in the second half, I was trying to find what they did defensively to turn things around. I got nothing. There was pressure. There was more pressure. That's the one thing I do have. There was more pressure in the second half. Not overwhelming. Not to the point where the Bengals shouldn't have been able to deal with it, and not to the point where it affected their Bengals offense more than the Bengals did. I mean, two drops by A.J. Green that are big passing plays that are key moments in the game. Again, he continues to have these horrible second halves against Pittsburgh and shrink from the moment and struggle. Very strange because he's so good all the rest of the year, basically. But that's the reality of where we're at with A.J. Green. If you're going to blame Andy Dalton, who played well in this game, if you're going to blame Marvin Lewis, if you're going to blame all these people, if you're Cincinnati, you have to blame A.J. Green in this game. And I think he's a great player. I think he's the best player on Cincinnati's team. I think he's outstanding. I love A.J. Green. But the reality is this dude let plays on the field at the end of the game, and that can't happen if you're Cincinnati. So I totally get frustration with him. He deserves blame. Brandon LaFell dropped a huge pass that would have cut. It was like a third and 23 or second and 23. He would have cut that down to like, it would have been like a third and 5 if he'd have made this catch on that crosser in front of the linebackers. Just they let Andy Dalton down. That sounds weird to say, doesn't it? But they did. They let Andy Dalton down. And not that Dalton was perfect in the second half. I thought he made, you know, some poor decisions here and there. I thought he held the ball too long on that 3rd and 2 that the Bengals had a chance. I think it was their last drive of the game. He held the ball too long, and Bud Dupree was able to find him in a 3-man rush and bring him down for the sack. But, you know, there really wasn't even pressure on that play. You know, pressure plays, I'm thinking of the sack Bud Dupree let go. He didn't have. That could have been huge, but still forced a Dalton throwaway. TJ Watt came up from coverage and really was the one that forced Dalton to not be able to recollect himself after Dupree. I have no idea. Whatever happened. But really, that was, I'm trying to draw from plays in this game where you felt like Pittsburgh just dominated and controlled things defensively. I mean, Joe Mixon was running freely for 5 yards a carry. Giovanni Bernard hasn't run well in years, and he had 13 carries for 77 yards, averaged 6 yards a carry. Defense was an absolute sieve against the run. Andy Dalton had an 11-yard run in this game, untouched. I mean, this is the hardest game of the year for me to look at and point to positives for the Steelers. Even in all the other ugly ones, they've barely been able to escape loss. I mean, this is the hardest one. If you're looking for good things in the process, they're tough, they're resilient, I'll give you that. They have a great mindset to stick with it in these games. When teams don't put them away when they have the opportunity to, don't count out the Steelers in the fourth quarter. The drive to tie the game was a very good one. The drive to win the game was a very good one. Never, ever should have been in position for either of those things to happen, except for the fact that they're playing Cincinnati. It's just the reality. Ben was bad in the first half. He was erratic. He threw an interception that never should have happened. He made a couple other throws throughout the game that, quite frankly, should have been intercepted. The Steelers got a field goal in the second half, or in the end of the first half, because George Iluka is going for a headshot and trying to knock out AB rather than catch the football. Hit him right in the chest. He's not even looking at it. It's the Bengals, man. The Bengals do this every single time, and they never learn. If you want to complain about Mike Tomlin's coaching, go ahead, because there's stuff to complain about. I get it, but man, aren't you glad Marvin Lewis isn't running the Pittsburgh Steelers. Because what a disaster Cincinnati is. You could talk about the drop, but you can talk about the pass interference and letting a receiver get behind you on a vertical route. with that type of time left in the first half that the Bengals had? I mean, unbelievable. Trey Kirkpatrick is literally owned by the Steelers. Every single aspect of the team. Ben kills him. AB kills him. Le'Veon Bell kills him. He is the laughingstock in Pittsburgh. It's what it's become. And this game was the epitome of everything I said on the week leading up to the podcast. The Steelers don't really play well against the Bengals. The Bengals play the Steelers pretty well. They never win because they beat themselves. They literally allowed Le'Veon Bell to score a touchdown because they didn't tackle him or push him out of bounds. Think of the reel of all the different things you could put together from Steelers-Bengals games over the last however many years. It's unbelievable. Three drops down the stretch killed the Bengals. A blown protection on that Vince Williams sack was huge. Went in untouched. Untouched. Yes, I like the design by Pittsburgh. They deserve credit. I'm not taking away from everything the Steelers did. But look at what the Bengals do. 13 penalties for 173 yards. I've never even seen such a thing. I mean, you can take positives away from the Steelers' performance, but they are few and far between. Thought Le'Veon Bell was very good. Antonio Brown was very good. I mean, it drops that he played through the injury, and that's all good. But we know Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown are good. We know those things. We don't know, can the Steelers protect the football? Can the Steelers dominate a weaker opponent? Can the Steelers, they couldn't stop the run. And I know the loss of Shazier is huge, but you have to be able to stop the run against the bottom tier offensive line in the NFL without their starting running back. I mean, it was a mess. It was a mess of a game for Pittsburgh. The blown cover, and yes, TJ Watt did get held. It was a little ticky-tacky. I did not think it was an egregious call, but Joe Starkey just posted a picture of it. You can see the jersey pulling away from Watt's body as Bernard's holding it, and the way that his head went down and he kind of wrapped his arm around Watt's waist, even though he didn't get a good grip of him, it clearly looked like a hold. If it isn't Pittsburgh, everybody unanimously agrees for the most part it's a hold. It's Pittsburgh, so people are going to say they get calls. I get it. I'm completely fine with that. It's whatever. That's how people act with this team, and that's fine. But if you're a referee on the field, the jersey pulls away from a player like that, and another player's got a grip of it, and that player's right in the quarterback's face, literally right in front of you, like 5-10 yards in front of you, there's no way you're not going to throw the flag. You're throwing the flag. So Bengals fans can complain all they want, but still another blown coverage on the back end for the Steelers. I have no idea what Cody Sensipal was even doing in the first half. Yes, AJ Green pushed off him slightly, but get your hands on him. You have to be physical at the line of scrimmage. And so AJ Green's wide open for a touchdown. I mean, was there a tight window throw in this entire game for Andy Dalton, including throws that were dropped that could have been monumental for the Bengals? I mean, there were wide open players absolutely all over the field. And the loss of Shazier and Mitchell are massive, no question. The loss of Joe Hayden is massive, but this was next level ugly. No one was even around Bengals receivers the vast majority of the time. So I thought when I watched it live, it looked like the zone drops from just about everybody were off in terms of their angles. Players too close together and leaving big spaces for receivers just kind of to sit down in. So the Bengals receivers were just taking advantage of it. They were very prepared for a spot-dropping defense, and it still wasn't enough. And it wasn't really Andy Dalton's fault. That's shocking to me. Shocking to me that it wasn't Andy Dalton's fault that the Bengals lost. Shocking to me that the Steelers could not, to save their lives, stop the run. And I don't know how the Bengals lost when both of those things were very true. I mean, it's amazing to me. A couple things to address, obviously. Juju Smith-Schuster's hit. Okay, so here's my thoughts on Juju Smith-Schuster's hit. It was a physical shot. It was not a blindside block. It doesn't even go, even if you look at the rules of a peelback block, it's not a peelback block, you know, or anything like that. So I think he'll avoid punishment for that part of it because he came down the line. And people said, oh, it's the Hines Ward block. No, not at all, actually. Hines Ward came from behind Keith Rivers. And remember, it was legal at the time, so I have no issue with it. But he came from behind Keith Rivers and blindsided him and laid him out. Juju was square with Vontaze Burfict. As Burfict is coming across the field to make a tackle on Bell, Juju is coming across the field at him. Burfict just didn't see him. He was right in his line of vision. He just didn't see him. So, I mean, obviously he was in his line of vision. He hit Burfict's face, who was looking straight at him, but threw him because he was looking at Le'Veon Bell. So it was a legal hit from that perspective by Juju Smith-Schuster. No question there. Where it gets ticky-tacky, I thought he turned his head away, went in with his shoulder, still ended up making contact helmet to helmet. So I get why the flag is thrown. I think it's almost impossible for a player to avoid. I think that it's extremely difficult. I've said this for years. I don't really think, like, helmet to helmet shots in a game, there are a couple occasions where you can say, yeah, that was clearly a flag. On a vast majority of the time, it just happens. The vast majority of the time, it just happens. Football is a fast game. It's a physical game. It's a violent game. Guys are ducking. They're falling. You know, they're moving into contact at full speed. Defensive backs are dropping their pad level. Receivers are slipping, trying to regain gain control of the ball or get down to the ground. And helmet-to-helmet contact happens. There's really almost nothing you can do about it as a defensive player the vast majority of the time. If they want to penalize it, that's fine. I'm just saying there's no way you can ever be like, you can ever say, oh, wow, you know, this penalty, blame Juju Smith-Schuster for this. Blame Mike Mitchell for this. Whoever you want to say, vast majority of the time, it's not true. And George Iloka had a headshot on Antonio Brown in this game. And I think he's trying to make a play and jar the ball loose. Is it helmet-to-helmet contact? Absolutely. Should it be penalized? Yes. By the letter of the law, that should 100% be penalized. And it was penalized correctly. It's not a dirty play by George Iloka. No way. He's trying to make a play to save the game and knock the ball loose from Antonio Brown's hands. And if he gets a penalty in that process, it's better than giving up the game-winning touchdown or the game-tying touchdown. And so he's just a guy trying to make a play. And yes, do players need to be careful? And I get why you're penalizing headshots. Do I think it really changes things? Do I think it really keeps players from hitting the head? No, because I don't think most of it is within the player's control. I think they're trying to make a play, bang-bang moments, playing fast, which is what you have to do in the NFL if you're going to ever be successful. And I think the stuff just happens. So I think they can penalize it if they want. I don't think it'll end up changing much of anything. I don't think it's changed much of anything. So that's basically how I feel about it. Dirty hit by George Iloka? No. Dirty hit by Juju Smith-Schuster? Absolutely not. I mean, it's ridiculous that we even have to talk about it. It was not a dirty hit at all. You know, he goes in, he tries to go in with the shoulder. The helmets end up making too much contact, I thought. I get why the flag's thrown because of that. The taunting, obviously a necessary, not a smart play by Juju because it's always going to be flagged. If you followed me, I've said for years, I think taunting's a great part of the game. I think it's fun. I think trash talk's great. I love the old, you know, the old school mentality in the field of AFC North matchups and physical football, and that involves a lot of the verbal stuff. Now, there's obviously a line, and officials would always meet that out in the past. Now it's just anything. And that's the way the game is played today. And I don't have to like it. I don't have to like all those aspects of it. I don't. If you follow me, you know I don't. I love the physical, chirpy, edginess of football. I think that's the way it was intended to be played. I think if you don't like that, don't play it. And that's completely fine. I don't think there's any issue with that. And I think that we protect the heads of players. I think that's the key. But I don't think this trash talk, what are you afraid of someone's feelings getting hurt? This is football. Like, I'm not concerned about that. So if officials are, NFL is, they've chosen to penalize that. Juju Smith-Schuster's got to be smarter. He's got to avoid those types of situations and not be caught in that spot where he's standing over perfect taunting him. That's basically my thoughts on the Juju Smith-Schuster situation. The Shazier injury was obviously terrible. Not only just for the sheer fact of a player getting injured in that nature, just kind of the way it happened, the teammates' reactions, Vince Williams crying, Cam Hayward kind of standing there holding his hands. It was just kind of one of those moments where, people really overreact on social media and they really, you know, oh, football's horrible, football's this and that. Don't buy into that. Don't be one of those people that tweets those things or says those things, you know, out of a reaction. You know, life is risky in a lot of different fields. Players are blessed to be able to play the game of football. I think we're blessed to be able to enjoy it and watch it. I think it's a great game. I think it teaches you a ton, and there's obvious risk involved. And, you know, Ryan Shazier knows that. He'd be the first to tell you that. I think that it was really unfortunate what happened in this situation. I don't know why we react in that way and condemn a whole sport and things like that. You know, when there are tons of violent physical sports out there and tons of chance of injury for players in just about every sport. And so I don't really get that aspect of it. I think that that's really short-sighted of us. But at the same time, when Shazier went down, there's part of you that's like, oh man, it's tough to think about win-loss right now as a fan anyway. And I know a bunch of players tweeting out that as a player, when something like that happened to one of their teammates, you think about it like maybe the next play, and then, you know, you're back into the flow of the game, and there's just no, you know, you're just so conditioned to play that it doesn't really have much of an effect. So I don't know whether that's true for everybody or not, but as a fan, at least watching at home, I thought it was difficult, at least for that first half, to think about think about much else other than what Chaser's status was going to be. And then I think things started trickling out a little bit that maybe it wasn't quite as bad. And so far it seems like there's some good news. He's got some feeling in his lower extremities apparently. And the next 24 to 48 hours is going to be big to see how much movement he gains back and what the swelling does and things of that nature. I don't expect to see him back again this season. I know people were saying that, oh, the Tommy Maddox injury, only missed a week. And I don't think we have anything close to what we saw with in that situation with Maddox. I think this is a lot worse. I have no idea whether Chaser will play again or anything like that. And I don't really want to speculate about it, to be honest. I don't think we'll see him again this season. I think that, your prayers obviously up for him and his recovery. We've got a job to do, and the Steelers have a job to do, which is to replace him on the field, to talk about who's going to eventually fill those shoes. Tyler Matakevich also hurt in this game. I honestly didn't get a really good look at it. The game was moving so fast, so much was happening. I don't really know that that's a huge loss for Pittsburgh. He was playing very poorly. I thought teams can really take advantage of him. LJ Fort honestly might be a better fit, even though I don't think he's quite as assignment sound against the run. He's just a faster, rangier player. It changes their style of play a lot less when he's on the field. I still don't feel great about it. I honestly think TJ Watt moving to inside linebacker could be a good thing for this team. It could be the direction they have to move. If something like that would happen, he's great in coverage. He's rangy. He's shown some ball skills. I think he has some experience playing off-ball linebacker, if I recall correctly. Now I'm having trouble remembering. But I think he has experience there, and obviously he's played some there in the Steelers, you know, 4-4-3 type of look. So that's something the Steelers can experiment with. It's not like he's doing a whole lot of damage as a pass rusher off the edge anyway, although he's had good games against the Bengals, I should say. So I think that that's something the Steelers maybe can look at, and then playing Chickalo with Bud Dupree on the edge, and oh my gosh, please play James Harrison, and please do not play Arthur Motes anymore. Maybe James Harrison finally gets into some games and gets to make an impact now that we're in week 14. But that's something that I would look at, I think, if I'm Pittsburgh. I thought quietly Martavis Bryant did good things in this game. The kickoff return for a touchdown was obvious. That was a big one, and I thought J.J. Wilcox holding penalty was bogus. So I thought that should have probably stood, and Bryant makes a big impact splash play, and I don't remember the last time. I think Alex Kozora, Steelers Depot, who does awesome stuff, tweeted out that that would have been the first one since 2010. I don't even remember that, so that shows how long it's been since the Steelers have had any type of impact, really, in the kickoff return game. So to see Bryant do that back-to-back weeks is good. I really worry about his ball security on kickoffs, but you know, that's the way things go. You got to put splash players back there and go for the big plays. I like that part of it. And he had some big catches too. I thought there were some tight coverage plays where he caught that slant that he caught on the game winning drive for the field goal was a really nice catch. He hung on to that one. I don't know how he hung on to that one through contact. That's the kind of catch he's had a hard time making. So I thought some good things from Martavis Bryant in this game. He missed the deep ball, vertical ball that he went up for, went right through his hands. And that's so many times this season we've seen him not make plays on vertical balls. So I think that's really frustrating because he's getting those types of opportunities. And, you know, and in this game, Le'Veon Bell had six targets. He had six targets. Juju Smith-Schuster had five targets. And Brown gets 15. That's always how it's going to be. That's your ideal meeting out of the targets. But Bryant hasn't capitalized on all of his. So I still am really frustrated with the fact that he's not really good at anything he should be good at right now. He's not really been good down the field. He's not really been good separating down the field. And he's not really been good in the air at all. And that's bizarre. So that's where we're at with Martavis Bryant at this point. But he did other things well and kind of offset it a little bit. So I think that that's encouraging for Martavis Bryant. Hopefully they continue to get him going more and more as the season moves on. I thought Le'Veon Bell was phenomenal throughout the game. I thought he ran really well, showed patience at the end, let things develop. When they let him get out on the perimeter, he had some of his better runs. The Steelers are still struggling to get movement on the inside as an offensive front, but I think that they're getting there. I think when they pull players and when they're using pin and pull concepts and counters and a lot of those concepts, G leads and things like that, to get Bell out on the perimeter where he can read things and react to things and see, you know, we kind of spread the defense out, extend him and let him find a crease. That's when the Steelers are at their best, but they have to be able to run inside too. You have to, you can't just do one. I thought for the most part, Todd Haley had a good game. I know the Steelers converted that fourth down. The one thing I griped about was that on a 3rd and 10, I think it was on their touchdown drive, I believe, when the Steelers converted that fourth down. On a 3rd and 10, your go-to play was a screen pass to Xavier Grimble. I, I'm, I am floored by that. But he somehow got 9.5 yards out of it, and it wasn't really well done at all. Grimble was great on that play. I'm going to highlight it later this week. But Grimble made a heck of a play, and he's had very few opportunities this season, but he's really made the most of them. He's kind of quietly been a big player for the Steelers this season. The fourth down, the shovel pass catch for the Steelers, I know it's an easy play, obviously, but runs it well, doesn't drop the ball. He's had issues with that. But this screen play was a great play by Xavier Grimble. The vision, the patience, he kind of let blockers run, he let players run by him and let things develop. And for a guy, I don't think we've ever seen him catch a screen pass. He was very natural in that role. So maybe they saw something in practice that I'd never seen before. I would like to see Grimble do it again because I'm not sure that that's necessarily his bread and butter. But yeah, I was floored by the play call, but Grimble made pretty good use of the play. So in Cincinnati, I thought that they overran it and kind of blew it on their end too, but what else is new? I think that Pittsburgh did find a way to get pressure in the second half and was big. I thought TJ Watt played a good game off the edge. I thought Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt were really quiet, and Watt made an impact where they needed to. Dupree even had a good rush. He just didn't wrap up. He could have had a 2-sack game, man. He could have had a play where he actually beat a tackle to get a sack. That doesn't happen very often for Bud Dupree. His sacks this season, I think he's got 5 of them, and 3 have been unblocked, and the other one was a cleanup sack from this game. And then he has 1 where he beat a tackle. I think it was in the Minnesota game early in the season. So he doesn't beat blockers 1v1 for sacks very often, which is what you want if you're getting a first-round pass rusher. But he is athletic enough to keep things alive, keep moving, and chase down guys if they hold the ball too long, which we have also seen this season. So give Dupree credit for that. The defense did find a way to make some plays when they needed to, no question. But I thought also they really, really benefited from Cincinnati shooting themselves in the foot repeatedly on offense. Penalties were big for Cincinnati on both sides of the ball. I mean, 173 yards of penalties, and you still only win by 3. I think there's a lot of issues with the Steelers process. Last thing I'll touch on for this podcast is, why do people get so upset when I say that the Steelers have not played anyone? And I really honestly, send me answers on Twitter, at Ledyard NFL Draft. I don't get it. The Steelers haven't played anyone. It's not their fault. The Steelers haven't played a tough schedule. I don't know how that's really debatable. The Vikings, when they beat them week 2, were they the Vikings team that we see now? No chance. Maybe you can turn around and say, okay, well, the Chiefs aren't good now, but they were 5-0 when the Steelers beat them. I can get on board with that. I can understand that, although I think that there were holes still for the Chiefs. I think that the play of Alex Smith was always going to come back down to earth. But I can get on board with that. But tell me why the Steelers lost or won that game 19-13 in blue coverages and only Smith missing wide open receiver in the end zone was really the reason the Steelers escaped with a victory. Now, you can do that. You can pick apart a lot of different games. Sure, I get that. But that was hardly a dominant victory against a team that's obviously proven to be at least average, if not below average at this point. So you have that. Jacksonville, maybe the only team that was playing well when the Steelers played them that they've faced, and that's a top 10 team, and they Steelers lose 30-9 in that game. And I know they left opportunities on the field, and I don't think it's 30-9 next time the two teams played, but you get what I'm saying here. And it's not the Steelers' fault that the AFC's a dumpster fire. No one's blaming them. I'm not ripping the Steelers for not having played the best teams in the NFL. They don't have any choice. The schedule's created by the league. It's not their fault. Everybody acts like they have to defend the schedule to defend the Steelers. Steelers haven't played anybody. It doesn't mean that they won't play better when they play quality opponents. We'll find out in 2 weeks. But the reality is that they played the NFC North when the Vikings were in disarray in week 2. They didn't know what was going on at that point. Case Keenum's first start. They win 26-9 in that game. Clearly not the Vikings team we have now. No one debates that. Clearly not the Vikings team we face today. And then the Lions, they're an average team in the NFL. If you're putting together the best 10 teams in the NFL, though, what teams are you giving me? From the AFC, New England, that's probably it. There's the vast majority of the Steelers' games right there. Jacksonville, when Bortles is on and the Steelers lost to them. And the Steelers, when they're getting it all right, those are the only good teams in the AFC. You can make a case for the Chargers, but they're still the Chargers. I'll believe it when I see it. They barely beat the Browns. So, I mean, if you look at that, look at the NFC. I take the Eagles, I take the Vikings, I take the Saints, the Panthers, the Falcons, I take the Rams and the Seahawks. with Aaron Rodgers healthy, if that happens again and the Packers end up making the playoffs 6-6, boom, they're back in it. Dallas Cowboys is 6-6. They get Ezekiel Elliott back and get the rest of their team healthy. I probably take 8-9 teams in the NFC over anybody in the AFC other than the Patriots. Steelers haven't played any of those teams, except for the Vikings, and we already talked about that one. So, you tell me. Show me where the Steelers have played a schedule that proves this is a good football team. They're barely beating bad teams. They're better than the bad teams. They're playing at a below average to below average level right now in the vast majority of their games. Now, there's been moments, sure. The Tennessee game, there's been moments. And yeah, the Titans are 8-4. It's a nice win in the AFC. I take all those NFC teams I just listed over the next team in the NFC. I take all of them over the Titans. And then probably a couple teams in the AFC over the Titans. They're not a good football team. I've watched them enough. They're barely squeaking out victories over the lowest of the lows right now. Not they've had moments this season. The Steelers have had moments this season. The difference between the Steelers and other teams that are not good right now is that the Steelers have the potential and ability to be great. That's the difference. And because the Steelers can be great, and because they've been great in the past, and because they have so many big names from around the league and so many talented players, that's why people are so hesitant to say this isn't a good football team, or this is a bad football team, or whatever it might be, however you choose to describe it, whatever ambiguous word you want to use. My point is the Steelers are not, they should not be grouped based on the way they've played this season with the best teams in the NFL, because they have not played on that level this season. Now, do they have the ability to be with them? Yes, absolutely. This isn't like Baltimore, who should not be grouped with the best teams in the NFL, and they don't have the ability to be with the best team, one with the best teams in the NFL. There's a lot of teams in that boat. Steelers aren't in that boat, but they also aren't in the boat of having played like one of the best teams in the NFL. That's close to just being a reality at this point, guys. It's not a hot take or anything like that. It's just reading between the lines, looking logically at the schedule and the way this team's performed against the slate that they've performed against. This isn't a good football team yet. But their record is good because they've had the benefit of playing a ton of bad quarterbacks, a ton of bad teams, and there's really no question about that. Look at the quarterbacks, DeShone Kizer, Case Keenum before all this started, Mike Glennon, they lost to, dear God, Joe Flacco, terrible, Blake Bortles, they lost that game. Again, Bortles didn't do much, but defense did. Alex Smith, who is now, there's talks of replacement, and Alex Smith has always been Alex Smith against the Steelers, regardless of how he was playing in that game. He's always struggled against Pittsburgh. Andy Dalton, who was bad the first time around against the Bengals. Matt Stafford was great, let him up for over 400 yards. The Lions went 0-for-5 in the red zone. Some of that was the Steelers playing well in the red zone. Some of that was the Lions. I don't think you can say a consistent formula for success is holding a team to 0-5 in the red zone. You can't let a team have 5 red zone trips and expect to win 20-15. It's not realistic. And the Colts and the Steelers would be the first one to tell you that. Jacoby Brissett, Marcus Mariota, and the Steelers did play well against him. Mariota is obviously having a down year. It's been a lot of talk in the media. I still give the Steelers credit for playing well against a decent quarterback in Mariota there. The first time they really played a quarterback that I would consider above average on the season, the way they're playing this year anyway, and come away successfully and come away with a good performance. Maybe you can throw Alex Smith into that. Brett Hundley, who they let dice him up for a couple big plays, and then Andy Dalton again, who I thought played pretty well last night. So yeah, they're going to play Joe Flacco next. They're going to play a Ravens offense that has been bad for a long time, and it's going to be Sunday night game, and we're going to have a lot of the same conversations probably about after this game, regardless of win or loss, because the Steelers haven't, I don't think they come out and dominate Baltimore. The Baltimore's defense is good, and it'll be a good test for the offense, and so you know, there'll be good things that they can show in this next game, but New England's going to be the key. Because then they play Tom Savage and probably DeShone Kizer if he's still kicking in Cleveland at that point. So that's the test. The game in 2 weeks is going to be big because we're going to give us a barometer where the Steelers are at. But the Patriots' defense is very beatable this season. And so it's not to say that the Steelers can't win the AFC. It's just that the Patriots are the only good team right now in the AFC. And so if they can find a way to get on that level and beat New England, which they have the ability and the potential to do, they have not played to that level where they would have beaten New England in really any performance I think that they've put out there so far this season. So that's where we're at with Pittsburgh at this point. They are an enigma. They are a strange football team. It has been a very, very odd season, but they are 10-2, and we are happy about that. And they have once again done to the Bengals what no one thought could happen again against Cincinnati. And it is the Bengals being the Bengals and the Steelers taking advantage of the fact that they are a disaster of an organization. We'll be back again later in the week. We'll break down all 22 from this game. A lot to talk about, a lot to look at in that. And we got to get you ready for Baltimore. We'll have a primer up next. Podcast the next couple days as well. Wednesday and Thursday, we'll have them out for you on the Locked On Steelers podcast. Don't go anywhere.